We'll come back to Commissioner Rodriguez.
I'm present. Had you muted, sorry.
Thank you. Ward 2, Ward 3.
Present.
Ward 3, Commissioner Hunter.
Present.
Ward 4, Commissioner Andrews.
Here.
Ward 5, Chairperson Clark.
Here.
Ward 6, Commissioner Pollitt.
Here.
All right, Chairperson Clark, you do have one.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the approval of the March 1st meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review them?
Yes.
I have a question. This is Commissioner Rodriguez. Yes, I have a question.
Ask a question.
I thought that the March meeting was called off because of the lack of a quorum.
That was the 8 o'clock.
I see. Okay, thank you.
I have a motion before presented. Do I have a second?
Did you made a motion that to accept the meeting minutes as written?
Yes.
Okay. I second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, can we do a roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Rodriguez.
I pass it. Present.
Commissioner Burke. Yes.
Commissioner
Hunter. Commissioner Hunter.
Yes.
Yes. Commissioner Andrews.
Aye.
Commissioner Pollitt.
Aye.
And Chairperson Clark.
Aye.
Passes 6-0.
Hey, Aaron, do you happen to know why we're getting all this feedback?
Commissioner Rodriguez, whenever he has when he unmutes to speak, it sounds like we're getting feedback through the computer speakers. So we can mute him, but when it's his turn to speak, we might get a little bit of feedback.
No problem.
Number 3 in the agenda is the staff update.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. My name is Vivian Neuscheller. I am the Deputy Director for Business Services. Joyce Garland officially re-retired a couple of weeks ago, and we have a new Business Services Director in place. Her name is Angel Ozelman. Her name is on the participants list. If you want to look at it, taking me some time to get accustomed to pronouncing her full name. She was invited to the meeting, but is probably taking another meeting. So I just wanted to put that out there to let the board or the commissioners know. So as you may be aware, we are getting to the tail end of the budget process. The city manager submitted his recommended budget to Mayor and Council April 18th. We're set to submit tentative budget, I believe it's May 9th, and that will set the cap to the budget. So what that means is we will no longer be able to increase the total budget, but we will have, or the Mayor and Council will have the ability to shift dollars around as long as there's or shift dollars around between programs or decrease the budget. So they still have an opportunity to do that. And then the final budget adoption will be June the 9th. And that concludes my staff updates from Business Services.
Thank you. Any questions? Any of our virtual commissioners have a question?
No questions, except the spelling of the new person's name wasn't on the list. Yeah, but that's okay. We'll get it next time.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next item on the agenda is the pedestrian and bicycle safety discussion. Has everyone received the materials that were sent out?
Chairperson Clark, I think we have number four as the annual financial statement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought
we do have both staff available, though, so if you'd like to take whichever one you can.
Well, let's do the budget or the financial statement.
Yeah, so Aaron, I have the responses to the commission's questions. So can I share? Just go ahead and take the lead on this.
Yes.
Okay. Hope I share the correct. All right. Can you see the list of questions with responses? It seems that I probably shared my screen on Teams.
I can see it in the conference room.
You can?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. Mr. Chair, Commission Member, we received questions from you all, and what we've done is I'll go through each question and provide a response that we have put together, and we've composed as well. So first question is on the notes to the app, our financial statements for fiscal year 22, notes 4. Deposits and investments. So we were asked to detail what makes up the bank deposits, reconciling adjustments of $51,876,821. What staff has done is they've provided details of each individual bank account that gives the total of our reconciling items or adjustments. By bank account. The same is true for our investment accounts. So the bulk of the $50 million amount is really coming from the FTA grant, or Federal Transit Administration grant, that was part of the American Rescue Plan initiative. That grant was for the most part, fully spent in fiscal year 22 at the very tail end of the fiscal year. And what occurred was the reimbursement request went to the grantor, the FTA, and they showed a large negative balance in the grant fund because what happens is we spent the dollars, we show a negative cash, and then the reimbursement from the grantor came in this fiscal year to help relieve that negative balance. And so that helps, in addition, that helps answer both A and B. Any questions? Do you want to field questions now, or would you rather field them at the end or ask them at the end?
I have no questions. Does anyone else have any questions at this point?
Okay.
Why don't we proceed?
We'll move on to the question number two, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So question number two asks on page three under the management discussion and analysis, the financial analysis of funds, there was a paragraph on the section 115 trust fund. The fund in fiscal year 22 overall for the year had an investment loss of $89.9 million, but it wasn't really unrealized gains and losses. The question asked, there were three questions asked for this question. What is the reason for the loss? So the result was from the change in the portfolio market value for the period, which was July 1 through 30th. Question B was, is the loss based on market-to-market accounting? And that is correct. Accounting standards requires the city to record investments at fair value. On C, it asks, is the loss attributable to the sale of fund assets at a price below the purchase price? So there was a realized loss for the period at of $12.7 million. So that was attributed to the sale of an investment below the purchase price.
Could you repeat that dollar value, please? The loss was $12 million, did you say? Or?
$12.7 million.
$12.7
million.
Thank you.
Yep. And I could share the responses with the questions afterward, Aaron.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Question number three. The question is, page six, notes in the financial statements, note seven, lists total long-term debt of the city certificate of participation at $752 million or $752.6 million. In 2021, approximately $645 million of proceeds from the issuance of COFs was placed in a Section 115 trust fund. So the question asked is, given the loss of the $89.9 million and how the current balance of the 534 in the trust fund, what is the total long-term certificate of participation debt directly attributed to last year's funding of the 115 pension trust? So the note noted in total for all certificates of participation debt. So remember, the city not only issued the certificate of participation for the trust, but we also had other issuances that were in place previously, and we also did a refund in the same year we issued the COFs for the trust. So the total as of June 30, 2022, the balance outstanding was $642 million, and the first debt service payment was made in fiscal year 22 for $16 million approximately. And it was made out of the general fund. Any questions? Oh, there's one more question I see here. Another question was asked. It says, would you please explain the details of the listed in your fund receivable of $2.1 million? So the fund financials did report a $2.1 million in the balance sheet interfund receivable. So that $2.1 million was the last payment made that was related to the paid to the trust that would then be sent to the public safety pension system. That was the last payment made towards the pension obligation the city owed for the fiscal year. So the actual cash was transferred to the trust bank from the general fund in early July. So the 2.1 was part of the obligation, so the cost was incurred in fiscal year 22, but the actual cash to the trust didn't happen until early July. Any questions on that?
Here none.
Okay. So question number four, the question was, again, related to the table of certificate of participation. So it listed various COPs and the rate of interest for each issuance. The question asked, one of the questions asked was, what is the aggregated rate of interest paid on the COP issuance to fund the trust? So the true interest cost to obtain the debt financing was 1.6%. Then a subset question to that was, what is the average rate of return on the Section 115 pension fund money that is invested in short-term money market funds? So approximately $63 million was mostly invested in mutual funds. At June 30, the yield was around 3 to 4%. The next question is the delta between the two rates of returns resulting in a net gain in the growth of the city's position in the trust fund balance versus the city's debt obligation? So I had a question. I wasn't really understanding what the question was, so I need clarification from the commission. I don't know if this is something somebody wants to clarify now or after I finish, or after we are done with this agenda item.
I did ask that question, and it would appear that it's really answering itself in that if you're receiving 3 to 4% rate of return against an obligation of interest payments of 1.6%, that it's a net gain.
Okay.
Is the answer satisfying?
Yes, that seems to take care of itself with the answer to A and B.
Okay. Okay. All right. The last question on that was, if not, what is the plan to stop future losses? So the trust, as you know, it depends on market fluctuation. So what the response was to this piece of the question was, we do have a trust board in place in addition to an investment consultant. So, those two pieces or groups were put in place to help us mitigate losses, period. So question number five relates to the mass transit system. So the statement of revenues and changes in fund balance. So the fund did show a deficit in fiscal year 22, $15.4 million. It appeared even after the $47 million in Federal Transit Authority grant money. The question that was asked about that was, what are the historic average annual fare box receipts? So during election years, so as you know, when the pandemic started, we paused or suspended fare charges to the public. But previous that our annual average collections were about $12.8 million per year for all modes, including, that includes the bus, the light rails, and the paratransit vans. B asks, how would the collection of fares have affected the deficit? So, because the city's general fund contributes into the system, that would have helped relieve, reduce the total investment the general fund contributes into the system. In light of the loss, what will be done in subsequent years to eliminate this mass transit deficit, especially given the loss of the FTA trend? What will occur is, so pre-pandemic, the general fund was already contributing dollars into the system. So what will happen is, with the loss of the FTA grant and the continued loss of the fare box revenues, the general fund will have to cover those those losses of revenue sources. Question number six was the question that was asked was related to the water utility. So the utility experienced a decrease of $9.6 million in revenues. So the collections in fiscal year 22 were $246 million. In fiscal year 21, the total collections came to $255.6 million. So the decrease was primarily generated by the decrease from fiscal year 21 to 22 was primarily generated because in fiscal year 21 or during fiscal year 21, the city experienced a drier and hotter year that resulted in consumption increases. And so in fiscal year 22, the system is not experiencing the same consumption. So that concludes my responses to the questions that were asked by the commission, Mr. Chair. Unless there's any questions, of course.
If I may, this is Commissioner Clark. Going back to number five, when you indicate the general fund is going to have to contribute the depth of the difference, there has been some discussion about looking for partners. Where do we stand on that?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer to that now, but we can put together a response for you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from any of the commissioners based on the presentation? Any of our virtual participants?
No questions from Commissioner Pollack.
I don't have any questions either. I do want to just thank the other commission members. These were great questions that you guys came up with. So thank you, everyone.
And thank you for your presentation.
You're welcome.
Now we go to number five, the pedestrian and bicycle safety discussion.
This is Commissioner Pollack. Do we have anybody that is talking for Department of Transportation and Mobility?
Commissioner Pollack, members of the commission, we do have Blake on the meeting. He's from Department of Transportation and Mobility, I believe, and he's ready to discuss this topic.
Perfect. So to start with, I guess, I was going to basically start with how is the Department of Transportation and Mobility organized? I know, for instance, they appear to have I'm not an expert in it, but they appear to have subdepartments such as traffic, streets, maintenance, signs, etc. And if somebody could give us an overview of the department and what their different subdepartments are, that would be great to start with.
Sure. Yeah. My name's Blake Olson. I'm the interim traffic administrator for Department of Transportation. I'll do my best here because I'm in the traffic division, and I can tell you all about what the traffic division does. As far as the entire department, I'd have to defer to the director's office on that. But I'll do my best here. So the traffic, the department, and stop me at any time. The Department of Transportation Mobility is a department within the city, of course, and it's made up of several divisions. And one division is traffic engineering, which I'm the administrator for. And then there's streets division, which, well, let me just say, so the traffic engineering division is responsible for the safe operation of the transportation network, the maintenance of all the traffic signals and streetlights. And so that's kind of our role there. And then if you move over to the divisions, they're responsible for the maintenance of the roadways. So for example, potholes and so forth. And then traffic engineering division is also responsible for the maintenance of all signs and markings on the roadway. So that's that. And then there's planning division. Sorry, question? No. Okay. Then there's planning division, and they're responsible for planning all the programs and so forth that are going to be delivered to the public. So I think that many of you probably heard of Move Tucson. So they were leading that effort to gather all the projects and things that the community, you know, wanted to see, you know, now and into the future. And then there's real estate division. Of course, I won't go in there. They acquire and sell property that may be needed for projects for widening and whatever it may be. So that's kind of the core group. Now, when you talk about, how is this going to touch a citizen? How is it going to touch a citizen? So we have several initiatives that you may or may not be familiar with. There's Prop 101. That was primarily like repaving arterials. That's wrapping up just about the last year of that program. We have Prop 407, which is delivering bike boulevards. Planning division is really taking the lead on that. And then the big one now is Prop 411, which is 80% local street paving. And engineering division, I didn't mention them. They're taking the lead on that. And then 20% of that Prop 411 is safety improvements. It's kind of a wide open category, but the Complete Streets Coordinating Council is overseeing all the funding that would go towards that. I can give you sort of different categories in there. One is, for example, we conduct road safety assessments. So if there's a road segment that were brought to our attention that there's could be problematic, we conduct a road safety assessment, and it comes different recommendations might come out of that. And thankfully now with Prop 411, we can address some of those infrastructure needs, crossings, that type of thing. And there's a smaller chunk of that 20% for safety that's going to go towards traffic calming, speed humps, speed tables, circles, and planning division is sort of standing up a method to how is that money going to be distributed equitably among the city, the wards, and the community, because not all wards have the same population, so it can't be, you know, divided by six wards is not really appropriate. So they're working on that. And then a big one is traffic safety for infrastructure. Our signal system has really been neglected since the 90s. So we're using some of that funds to bring the signal system up to current standards so we can do implement some of the emerging technologies that allow us to operate our signals in coordination better what we call preemption to serve emergency vehicles and different things like that. So I know that was a lot to throw at you, but that's kind of the department, the snapshot in how we're kind of addressing safety. So I do want to segue, just bear with me for a minute. So when you talk about traffic safety, that really does fall on my division, traffic engineering. And I can give you a whole presentation on traffic safety, but the pillars of traffic safety are really what we call the three E's, and sometimes they're expanded to others, but education, enforcement, and engineering. So if we want people to behave properly and be safe and live on the roads, you know, the roads need to be designed, right, for safe operations for all modes, not just cars, for pedestrians and bikes. But there also has to be a carrot and a stick. You know, if you're going to go 60 miles an hour down Limberlost, that's not right, but I can't engineer my way out of that. So there has to be some sort of enforcement. And then the last part is education. We need to get the word out, just like I feel like I'm old now, but Mothers Against Drunk Driving and things like that, where we just get people's attention. And the problem with the DTM space in the past is that our budget is funded through HERF, Highway User Revenue Funds, and that comes from gas tax and vehicle registration. And we can't use that funding. That funding is limited to infrastructure, so like signs, striping, roadways. So we can't use that money for education, which can be very expensive. But thankfully, the city manager and the council has allocated $150,000 this last fiscal year, and we're hopeful to get this coming fiscal year for our advertising campaigns on, you know, radio, and we're trying to get innovative with social media and targeting different age groups, motorcyclists, that type of thing. So I know there's a lot. And you know, maybe if you have any questions, I'm happy to come back anytime. If you have specific questions, I can answer those now or in the future. I did
Blake, I'm going to stop you so we can back up.
Sure.
And just go a little slower. Because you gave us a big, you know, huge amount. So we were given a presentation with some safety data on it, but I don't see 2022 in here. I just see 2021. So
yeah.
What happened to the
2022? So the way it works is that TPD is the holder of the data. They are the ones that complete the crash reports. And the crash reports by federal law are submitted to ADOT every year. And then they have to be vetted through ADOT and then submitted to the federal government, and then it's official. So I only have access to the data that's official data. And that 2022 data is typically not made available until 6 months after the calendar year. So I can only talk to that data. If you wanted if you wanted to get 2022 data now, you'd have to talk to TPD, because I'm not authorized to release.
Okay,
that.
No problem. And so can you run us through this data, what we're looking at, because I'm not sure what these charts are. I mean, the first thing is obvious. It's a map of, but I'm not sure what this is a map of. Is it just a map of bicycle accidents? Because we're looking at and bicycle accidents.
Yeah, let me just, I made some notes, and I know these are really cryptic, so if you don't mind, I'll share my screen and walk you through this. Can you see this map here?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so this is a map of all the bicycle crashes, fatal bicycle crashes from 2017 through 2021. Okay, so basically, this is year by year. So we typically average about 5 fatalities per year involving bicyclists. So the total for this 5-year period is 19 bicyclists lost their lives in Tucson. And that's what this shows down here.
What's the chart that says number, it's to the right of that bar chart. It says 19. What is that?
Oh, that's the total. So this data is, I queried it for, this data includes all of Pima County. So I queried just Tucson.
Okay.
So 19 is the total of each of these 5 years. So 2017 is one, 2018 is five. So if you add up these 5 years, it's 19.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's 19.
We can't hear you. I think you got muted somehow. Did Blake's connection drop off?
I can still see you moving, Blake, but we can't hear you. All right, he's going to log off and then jump back in.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm on the sixth floor of the Public Works building, and this is the first day we just remodeled our bad timing, I guess I'll say. Okay. So do you see the graph again?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so 19 fatalities over 5 years. And again, to victim blaming. I don't want to victim blame, but people do make mistakes. They do make bad decisions. But when you look at these 19 incidents over the, you know, we're looking at what can we do to stop this, right? So when you look at the operators of the motor vehicles that struck these 19 bicyclists, 13 of them were impaired. When you look at the bicyclists themselves, 11 of those 19 people riding the bicycles that were killed were impaired themselves. So this is a problem where we need to get the word out that you shouldn't be impaired if you're driving, obviously, or riding a bicycle.
But, Blake, now the number goes from 19 to 39. I don't understand.
Yeah. So there was 19 people killed, but in those 19 incidents, there was 39 people involved. So that includes the 19 people that were on their bicyclists, and it includes the vehicles that struck them and the people that were in the vehicle. So for example, if there was two people in a vehicle and they killed a bicyclist, that would count as three people.
Huh. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, and there were 19 people killed. Okay, 39 people involved somehow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know it's confusing.
And you're talking overall. This is not year to year. This is just an overall from 5 years ago to now.
Correct.
Okay, correct. So you guys trend these? I mean, this isn't a big number to trend. But do you trend these from year to year to see what's changing? More people are on drugs now than they were in 2017. More people on bicycles, on drugs, struck. Do you trend them? Do you know which way?
Yeah, it's going? I mean, you can slice and dice the data any way you want. I just took a 5-year snapshot. You can look at 1 year or 1 year, you know, like you're asking. That's totally possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Go
ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. Thank you. And then I just want to point this out, helmet use. So half of the people that on bikes that were killed were wearing a helmet. Helmet used. Oh, sorry.
No, it's unknown.
So they don't always collect the data. I mean, we're talking, you have to back up and remember, when an incident happens, the police have a form, and there's over 100 fields they have to fill out. These are rare. Yeah. I just want to highlight that, you know, I I hate to minimize something that as critical as a fatal crash, but, you know, as considering the amount of bicycle traffic we have and the number of cars we have on the road, a bicycle fatality, I would consider that rare. It's not the most popular thing to say, but it's basically true. Moving on, daylight predominantly is when the crash would occur. That kind of surprises me, actually. But that's just the data point. No really outliers on direction, I would say. And this one's kind of interesting. I would have thought that, okay, again, this is 39 units. That's the total number of people involved. But not really happening yet signals, which I would have, you know, I would have expected that more. And then again, to preface, you know, we're talking about police filling out reports. They're showing up at an incident after it happened. They're only noting speed as a factor in one crash. I think that's totally underreported. Likely because again they don't arrive, you know, they're not witnessing it happen, they're after the fact. So I just want to point that out. This is kind of interesting. Primarily going straight. I would have expected most bicycle fatalities to be like an angle, like someone pulling out from a driveway or something like that, but it's primarily the vehicle and the bicycle are going straight. So that's somewhat interesting, this 25 number here. And then this is what I'd expect, you know, this is the federal category that they use is young is under 25, 25 to 64 is middle and older driver. That's just for privacy reasons. That's how they report it. But all in the middle, which is what we'd expect. And then predominantly male in both the bicyclist being killed and the operator of the vehicle that killed them, which I would expect. And that's that. I do have the same information for pedestrians, so I'll pause for a second in case you have any questions.
Yeah, my predominant questions were about pedestrians. We had so many of them being killed.
Okay.
But I don't know what everyone else. Let me. If anybody had any questions, please ask them.
Blake.
Yeah.
I'm not able to glean from the data, but are there any bicycle fatalities that are just involving bicycles, no other vehicles?
That's a great question, and let me just let you know, I've been here 5 years at the city. And when a serious life-threatening, so they could die, it's possible they could die, or a fatal crash, TPD has an investigative unit that goes out to that crash immediately, and they write what they call a resume, which is a brief synopsis on what happened, but the investigation's ongoing. I get those reports hours after the incident. So I've seen every single one over the last 5 years, and I've never seen a single bicycle crash that I can recall. That's your question.
Yes. And then this may be premature, but in looking at the map that you gave us with incident locations, it appears that bicycle crashes, and it looks like there's some hot spots, if you will, for pedestrian crashes in Tucson, seem to occur in similar locations. And is that due to the demographic in the city? Is it due to highway design in the city or traffic counts? Are there similarities that might be linking the numbers and locations of bicycle and pedestrian accidents that we see on these maps?
That's a good question, and I would say the opposite. To me, it looks like a shotgun and less like similar locations. But I will tell you, it's a good, I don't know how much time you have because I could talk a lot, but I will tell you, and I think it's worth mentioning, that we did develop and publish, I believe it was 2019, and I'd be happy to share it with you, a pedestrian safety action plan. where they really delved into this data really hard and developed what they call a high injury network. So they identified roadway segments in the city that, I'll just say, it's more likely that a pedestrian crash or fatality would occur. And this action, and I'm an engineer, so I like to do things and get things done. Plans tend to sit on the shelf. That sidebar. But so they developed this plan. It had some action items. And due to funding, we just haven't been able to implement many of those. But the good news, and if you haven't heard, is that the city and the county applied for SS4A, which is Safe Streets for All. Biden-Harris administration safety funding, and the county and the city received $1.5 million early this year, and the county is taking the lead on that effort, and the plan is to develop, I don't know if you've heard Vision Zero, but it's a effort to reduce the number of fatalities on the roadway, and so they're going to develop a comprehensive action plan that addresses all modes, because the plan that was developed was a pedestrian safety action plan, and certainly the pedestrians are our most vulnerable users, so that makes sense. But this effort between the county and the city is going to take that plan and then look at all modes, bicyclists, vehicles, and develop certain strategies to mitigate this type of thing. And one example that I'm really excited about is look at all the speed limits in the city. We have done that. I don't know if we've ever done that. So that's one of them. Maybe we can start a discussion about speed enforcement or revenue enforcement. Well, I won't go into that, but different things to, you know, it's going to be a community focused effort. But the goal is to come up with an action plan, and then that same bucket of money that the current administration is holding will allow for us to apply for infrastructure money. And that's where we get millions of dollars to implement whatever the recommendations are in the report. So that's really exciting from my chair, because, again, having the plan is great, but having the money to back it up is really what we need.
So, Blake, you're saying that $1.5 million is just going to be to study it?
Correct.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, like I mentioned the speed limit evaluation. I don't know if that's going to be part of that $1.5 million, because we have to, that's a lot of work, and they'd have to hire consultants to do that. So I don't know if, and I can give you contact information for the county that's leading that effort. They haven't, you know, it's federal money, so it's, I can't even tell you how the red tape to get the money and get it started, but they're working on that. And I don't know how much of the money goes towards a plan per se, or some of it I'm hopeful can go into, if the plan says do the study, then can we do the study with that money, because I don't want to sit around and wait, right? So I'm just not dialed into that enough to know exactly where it's at.
That's okay. You know, can we switch? Yeah, let's switch to that map. Now, there's definitely patterns in here. You know, you've got these, like, to the south of South 12th Avenue in that whole area.
Yeah.
To the north, you have flowing wells. To the east a little bit, you have Grant and Auburn. Those are definitely three areas where there's a lot more pedestrians. And maybe we'll talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, let me talk about this. Go ahead.
I think we have Chairman Clark has a question before we move on to pedestrians, I believe.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the numbers of unknown that appear in these statistics. For instance, in safety equipment from the fatal bicycle accidents. Could we indicate?
Yeah, so that, again, that's a result of the officer So this report, how can I explain it? So they have a crash report with many fields that they fill out, and that data is dumped like an Excel file, and then it's sorted, and that's what I get, and then it's presented in this graphical form. It's just a function of them checking the box other, which isn't right, but that's what they did. They essentially didn't take the time to put thought, and I guess from my point of view, into filling it out correctly. So that's the information we get. That answers your question. Unknown. You know, can they tell it's dry or not? They write unknown. It just doesn't make sense to me, but that's what I get.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so this is, let me preface like this. I'll go through the data, but maybe give you the answer first, just to give you a hint. Over the last, like I said, I've been here 5 years. Every year, the number one crash type for pedestrians is crossing mid-block at night, and the pedestrian or the driver is impaired. It's just, that's what it is. It doesn't change, and we'll see that in the data. So I'll just give you it's sad, but that's the truth. And I do have I don't want to say a solution, but I have ideas that I'll share with you at the end here. So, basically we're looking at between 20 and 30 roughly pedestrians killed each year on our roadways. Again, sorted for Tucson, 147 over 5 years. This number was the same. I mean, I've seen a preview of 2022. It's the same number, 30 roughly. So that's what we get. The problem with, I was just talking to my colleague here, the issue again with the data on pedestrian fatalities is when you have I'll try and explain this quickly, but when you have a vehicle-to-vehicle crash, there's certain categories like left turn, right turn, angle, head-on, right? Well, when they, for some reason, I don't know why, but when the categories pedestrian crashes, they use other, and it bothers me because I want to know, you know, under what circumstances the vehicle struck the pedestrian. But as you see on this graph, they categorize a pedestrian fatal as other many times. And I'm going to try and work on that and get the word out that it's not helpful. So I'll move along here. So again, when we talk about impairment, it's good to keep the number, because I know these numbers jump around, 147, say incidents, and that's what it says. So 147 incidents. And so you're looking at nearly half of those incidents, the operator of the vehicle was impaired by alcohol, drugs, or both. And sadly, it's the same case for the pedestrians themselves. Half or more in this case are impaired by alcohol, drugs, or both. So that's, again, goes back to more of a societal problem than a traffic engineering problem. Direction of dark, again, like I said, over, you know, clearly predominantly dark conditions. Direction doesn't seem to matter. And then this is where I hear Lois, Commissioner Pollack, frustration on this information, because when they do the pedestrians and you mix the vehicle with the pedestrians, the data gets kind of murky. Again, you know, speed too fast for conditions. They weren't there, so how could they make an accurate determination of that? So it's not really useful information. I will say that they do note 75 did not use crosswalk. That's, again, valid, you know, where I'm getting my information, mid-block. And then no controls. So again, mid-block, so there's no signal, there's no hawk, there's no stop sign. We do see, you know, 70 at the signal. 11 pedestrian beacons are extremely safe. I hear anecdotally that drivers don't stop or pedestrians don't use them, but for the vast majority, that's not true. Again, going straight ahead, which means that's the vehicle, so that again means that it's not a right turn, it's not a left turn. There are right and left, I highlighted them here, but it's very low, so predominantly crossing mid-block. And then age groups, again, what we'd expect, the middle-aged group, it's kind of skewed because it's a large middle there. And then again, male operators and male crossers is what we're seeing. And I think that's about it. So the question is, what do we do about this? And I'll just
before you go on with that, Blake, I have another question.
Sure.
So I was on a mailing of a pedestrian and bike safety committee that used to be in existence. And do you know which committee I'm talking about? And I don't know if it was a city-sponsored committee where it was being run on the commission, or if it was just a volunteer, hey, let's have a committee. Because all of a sudden, that dropped off due to lack of people attending, and I've never seen it again.
I didn't quite hear your question, but I can answer that. So there is an active bicycle advisory committee. I presented them a couple months ago, so I know that they are active. And I can give you the contact. It's my understanding, there's always a city representative, I'll say, that is helping manage the committee. So
is it just for bicycles, or is it also include pedestrians?
Yeah, let me finish. So there is a bicycle advisory committee, and there was a pedestrian advisory committee, and it's an official city committee. They were involved in the development of the pedestrian safety action plan. But at some point, you're right, that's what I heard too, they disbanded due to lack of membership. But one of my colleagues told me, oh gosh, it's been like 3 months now, that they were trying to get that up and running again. And I was, you know, obviously going to be helping and present, but I didn't hear anything. And now you mentioning this first, now I'm recalling this from a while ago. And I do have the name of, I can provide the name of the person, the city that was assisting there, if you want to get in touch or something like that.
Yeah, that would be great. I would like to know that, because as you can see on the graph, bicycles are not the problem. We have horrendous pedestrian activity, but it's troublesome that we don't have even input from residents as to what they think issues are. So then the city could then go forward with at least additional information other than these statistics from the police that aren't that good.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that it's going to be real important for that group to get into existence, because we need that type of engagement for the development of the I call it the SS4A, State Streets for All, but the action plan. I mean, it's all the safety action plan. So, pedestrians are going to obviously be a key focus of that effort, because they're the, you know, statistically they're the greatest number in all the category modes. I didn't have that information ready today, but you talk about the modes. So you got pedestrian, bicycle, vehicle, and then motorcycle is usually the four we use. And obviously the pedestrians overrepresented, unfortunately, and all those. So if you don't have any, I'll just go on. Go ahead.
I've got some more. I just want to rein in a little bit, because when you guys talk about improvements, I mean, yes, you can say that this money is allocated, it's going to help pedestrian safety, but what residents want to see is an immediate, they want to see a very focused and more immediate response to pedestrian deaths. And so when we look at things, okay, there's going to be 1.5 million. You're talking years away and infrastructure that's years away. And even if you look at safe streets, you know, there's a map out there somewhere. You never see where your neighborhood or your area is going to be affected positively by this. So I'm kind of wondering, does DTM have somebody, do they have people assigned that are specifically focused on pedestrians? Who in DTM would I contact, you know, if I was interested in that? Is there people within each of these departments, or is this just traffic, or who is responsible for pedestrian safety?
Well, I mean, that's a really tough question. I mean, the thing is that there's traffic engineering is responsible for, like I said, when I started, the safe operation of the streets for all modes, but, you know, we can't snap our fingers and, you know, build sidewalks for the entire city overnight. So it's more of a systemic approach where, thanks to Prop 411, now we have money to build sidewalks. I know that's not a popular answer, but it kind of is what it is. And when I look at, like, you know, I review every fatal crash, like I said, and if I have someone on drugs running across the speedway at 11 o'clock at night and the driver that hits him is drunk, there's not a lot I can do, to be frank. So our best, you know, that's where the education really comes in it and really societal change. And I'm not, that might not be popular, but that's where I'm at.
Now, is there a, you know how they rank streets as to how damaged they are, you know, and how many potholes and how bad they are?
Yeah.
They give them a rating. Are you guys, is DTM, anybody at DTM doing something like that where you're looking at the map or data, basically, and saying these are our hotspots and focusing any actions in those hotspots? Because it may be totally different than where they're going to put a bicycle boulevard. I mean, I'm going to focus on pedestrians because that's the biggest, tiniest number we have. And so, and TPD told us that 2022 surpassed 2021. And we're on target kill them. So,
well,
I'm just trying to understand how everybody's set up and what they're doing.
Yes. So I answered that somewhat. So the pedestrian action plan identified the high injury network based on the crash data, and all that's going to be updated with the plan that the county and the city are working on. But you know, like you noted on the first graph, okay, you see a bunch of a group of pedestrian fatalities along. I'm just going to make something up, but like Speedway between here and here, you know, that's the time. You know, what's the answer? Well, the answer is sidewalks, and then my answer to that is more pedestrian hybrid beacons or hot crossings, at you know reasonably frequent locations. Because we don't expect people to walk a quarter mile and, you know, cross and turn around and go back. That's the way forward. So we have 140 hot crossings in the city right now, and we're going to probably double that in the next 5 or 10 years. And I know that's a long time, but that is going to make a huge impact, I believe, assuming that people use them properly. We have a big problem, or not a big problem, but, you know, any fatality at a hop, it can almost promise you that more than likely they didn't activate the button, but that's another story. But I think that, anyways, that's my hope, is that we're going to make a dent in this number by providing more safe crossings.
Do you guys?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Commissioner Berg had a question.
I have a couple of questions if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Blake, I want to start with a big picture question. We're a population of about 550,000 people, and these statistics, you know, are never good. One person dead is one too many. But how do we do in comparison to other cities of our size in addressing these types of issues for pedestrians and bicycles?
Yeah, that's a great question that I can't answer off the top of my head. I know that Arizona is an FHWA, what they call an FHWA-focused state, due to the number of pedestrian fatalities. I believe that Phoenix is pushing us over the edge on that by their numbers. You know, it's not like, if you understand what I'm saying, you see nodding, like, it's not just like Tucson is, you know, Phoenix is a big leader. That's a bad word. But they're the ones that are pushing us to the top of the list there. The good news, if there is any, is that we get more funding for safety improvements from the federal government because they allocate the money that way.
Now, a closer drilling down into this a little bit. You've talked about hawks and other things that over time, sidewalks that may well improve these statistics. I'm wondering about some immediate enforcement actions that might be possible to suppress this behavior, either on the part of bicyclists or pedestrians through enforcement. I mean, I go to, if you drive up Albernon and get to Albernon and Grant, you will see people in the middle of the day crossing 100 yards north of Grant and Albernon into the middle of traffic and standing in the door space and waiting for traffic to go by.
Yeah.
If there, I don't want to be talking about police state here, but I'm thinking that if you put some hotspot officers around the city on these areas, that you might have a positive impact. So I'd like your thought on that.
Thank you for that question, Commissioner. I can't speak for CPD. We do meet with CPD quarterly and talk about different initiatives. They're understaffed. Everyone, I think, knows that. The good news is they did, at one point, they were to the point where the motor officers are the ones that do primarily traffic enforcement. The motor officers were doing, you know, patrols because they were so low staffed. But now, as I understand it, they have a fully staffed motor officer unit. But I don't want to get too deep in that because I don't want to speak to them. We do Albernon and Grant, to be, just so you know, is the worst, the highest incident intersection in the city. A lot of that had to do with the demographics. There's a major project coming there, Grant Road. It's going to start construction probably before the end of the year. They cleaned a lot of that out by some of the land use there. But TPD does do outreach to those people and try and, you know, they hand out, like, reflective gear and let them know that we care about them, you know, we care about their safety. But that might be something you have someone from TV come in and speak to you about. Might be good.
Okay, thank you.
So I got a couple of comments. The city seems to be really reluctant to stripe crosswalks on streets. So you'll put a hawk up there that stops all traffic everywhere, and people don't know anything about them. So that comes back to your education thing. They stop at them like they're stoplights, and some people don't stop at all. Some people do what you're supposed to. But why won't the city stripe more crosswalks? They refuse to put it in. I live off Pima from Albernon to Swan, and from Columbus from Speedway to Grant.
we've been told repeatedly that they want to start the crosswalk. So we have, so the whole, you know, idea of changing the way people think, the city doesn't seem to be in on that thinking. So can you talk to us about why they don't start crosswalks?
Yeah, sure. So there was a landmark study in 2005 where they studied thousands of crosswalks across the nation, and they actually found that under certain traffic volume conditions, traffic volume, speed, and number of lanes, the incident of pedestrian fatalities at a location with the marked crosswalk was 10 times higher than one without it. And the thinking was that people, especially older and younger pedestrians, expected or had an anticipation that vehicles would stop for them just because the crosswalk was marked. So they came up with guidelines, and it's a table I would be happy to share with you, that you basically, it's, you know, you go down one column and you put the traffic volume in, and you go down one column, you put the speed in, you go down another column and put the number of lanes in, it tells you yes or no. And the lawyers got a hold of that chart, and if I violate that chart, I'm in court, and I've been in court for many days on an incident where the city marked a crosswalk that didn't follow the chart. I'm probably the one that, sorry, Commissioner Pollock, I'm probably the one that denied that request, but, you know, I have a, they call it the engineering standard of care, and I have to adhere to that, and I have a license. And so, we just follow the chart. We're not going to play with people's lives. And I'm not going to expose the city to liability. And I'm not going to risk my license when it's cut and dry on that chart. So,
So does that go for collector streets?
It does. It's based on volume, speed, and the number of lanes.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe you guys ought to put that information out into the public, because no one understands why they don't like crosswalks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I had one on. I had one recently on. I want to say Wilmot that I got a request for, and we looked at the data and it was removed and someone wanted it back. And when it was in existence, there was 5 pedestrian crashes. When it's removed, there hasn't been a crash there in 10 years. So, it kind of backs up the study.
Now, I have another question. We had really good luck in Garden District when they got these speeding trailers. So they're the trailers that sit on the side of the road. They show your speed. They have a sign that says what the speed limit is supposed to be, like 30 miles, and then they say how fast it's going. He had incredible success with them in slowing down traffic. So why is it that the city doesn't have more of those speed trailers? And do they have and also do they have more of the state equipment in that will show the same thing? It's just not, it's going to be there all the time. Powered by solar, it shows the speed that somebody's going the speed that's allowed. So do they have more plans for that equipment?
I'm not sure I was able to hear all of your questions, but I can speak to speed feedback signs. So we have 16 trailers. They're portable trailers that we rotate around. We've allocated 2 per ward. And so if you have a location, you can reach out to your ward or GTM, and we'll put it on the list, and we just rotate through there. The problem is that they're vandalized frequently. And so with 16, we can only operate, we usually have 12 out at a time, and we rotate them through. So 2 per ward, and with our extra supply, we're able to mitigate the vandalism. So that's the portable ones. We do keep up on the list, so we're doing a lot better. We had some staffing problems, so the wait was unreasonable, but now I think we got that down to you know, it's 2 weeks deployment is the minimum. So if you're third in line, you're going to have to wait 4 weeks for your turn. I think the second question was the permanent speed feedback signs. I'm a big fan of this. I'm the one that sort of initiated that in the city. And I just use my operating budget for that. And I just do it basically upon request. We do try and limit it to the, I hate to get into details here, but we have categories of road, safety, 1 through 4. So 1's the safest. So I try to limit them to 3s and 4s. And my budget, they cost about $6,000 each. I like to do 1 in each direction. So that's $12,000. I try and, you know, just because, it's not just money. It's also like our staffing resource to be able to install them and with contractors and this and that. So just managing that installation, I can usually get 6 pairs installed a year. I don't know if that answered the question, but that's where we're at on that.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Well, I have one. I just wonder, you know, the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices establishes some criteria for hawk signals. What prompts your department to look at installing a hawk signal? Is it based on the data we see on the safety analysis report? Or what do you use to determine?
That is a great question. I get sort of excited here when you start talking about this. But when I came to the city, we keep what a list, right? So if anyone asks, wait, can I have a hawk at this location? Put it on the list. And what we've been doing under my leadership the last few years is we rank the list based on those traffic conditions I mentioned before for crosswalks, because those are obviously are the same, you know, information that determines whether you can have a crosswalk. So we rank them based on that information. And then we also rank them based on, we use U.S. Census equity data. So we want to give them sort of extra points if they're near a school or they're near a senior center or a library or a low income area. And so we get this list and we rank them. So right now there's like 160 on there. I can tell, and so when I came to the city, we had like 0 money. So it was like, we're in the department of no, sorry, no, but we ranked the list. But I can tell you now, since we've kind of got our funding sources coming in, and I've applied for a lot of federal funding, of those, there's 160 on there. We're probably going to hit, like I mentioned before, 50 or more in the next, 5-10 years, that'll cut the list in half. The thing that's missing is our list is citizen generated. So no one's gone out and said, you know what, it makes sense to have, you know, like, council or commissioner, Pollock was saying is that, you know, on her street, there's no crossings for too far away. Right. But no one's gone the extra step and said, no one's requested it, so why are we thinking? And that's a total disconnect. So that's part of the, and I know I hate plans, but that's part of the SS4A effort is to come up with that missing piece and say, this is where we need a hawk everywhere in the city. So we know, you know what I'm saying, is we know now that we've considered where it makes sense, like, citywide. And then we can re-rank the list and see which ones we want to hit in which order. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Well, you know, along with that, as a neighborhood association, we were notified when a hawk was installed and forced to happen because the city made that decision without it. Yet we knew that where they were putting it probably wasn't the best location. And that's the one that is just one block north of Speedway on Albernon. So they put it for 3 lanes, 0 to 2. So we're all worried about death because somebody's going to go through that third zebra lane. And it'll happen. And then they were crossing to a convenience store, and there was no place to really go except back and forth to that convenience store, which ironically closed now, probably about 6-8 minutes after they installed that pump. And so, you know, the city will not ask us for input. They won't ask neighborhoods, force it down on us and say, we're going to put it there. And when we questioned it and said, no, there's going to be some stores down for 2 blocks away, further to the north, well, maybe you can have another hawk. You know, people don't like hawks. People that are in the car, they make you late for the light. You know, and so I'm worried about more hawks, actually, because they will make people more frustrated with driving, waiting for one or two people that are going to cross the street. And so I don't, you know, I wish they would just start reaching out and asking us where the hot spots are, because we know. You know, we drive the neighborhood, we walk the neighborhood, we know the neighborhood every day, yet no one reaches out to ask us anything. And so, and I'm sure that's like that in West Nexus. But what the city does is they say, hey, we've had a pedestrian death here, and one person called and complained, we better put a hawk there. So it's unfortunate, you know. So maybe, you know, like you're saying, they might do a reach out to more people and not have it done by committee.
Yeah, I can't speak to that specific location. I'm hopeful that the SS4A effort's going to be, you know, the outreach is going to be, the effort to make outreach is going to be strong enough that we'll reach those people. But I hear what you're saying.
Does anybody have any additional topics that they'd like Blake to try and review? Because I think he's given us great information. We really appreciate it. You're on the hot seat. Oh, sorry about that. I thought maybe, I didn't know who they were going to send in. But we really appreciate, you know, the information.
No. Yeah, I'm happy to.
Mr. Chairman, we talked about at some point having information about intersection. Cameras. I don't know if this is the right person for the forum. This agenda.
Similar to the future items.
Yeah, I have a couple ideas for you to commission. All right. Well, Blake, I just want to say thank you for your help and information.
No worries. Anytime, and I'll try and follow up with the information I promised or didn't promise, and I'll send that to Mr. Williams. Is that okay? Great.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Much. Okay,
yeah,
you too.
Take care. Bye.
Final item on our agenda is future agenda items. I'll be glad to take any comments.
I'd like to see an audit of some sort into DM. I don't know exactly what, because you can't go look at the whole thing. But it almost sounds like they're reactive and not preventive. And we see that, you know, the city seems to hang their hat on these things, the 401 money. Well, that's not necessarily going to change doing. And I'm just kind of wary of these committees and how they are doling out the money and where they're going to be spending it at. I've never heard of this SS4A. I have no idea what that is. And so there's so many initiatives. There's I don't even know the names of all of them. There's Complete Streets. That's going to be putting in bike paths and hopefully adding some sidewalks. But people want to know what they're doing proactively now to address
issues before they occur to address all these pedestrian deaths. I mean, it's, and like he was saying, I'm not sure how closely they work with TPD at all. That would be just another interesting topic to hear about. It's like, who's responsible for working with DTM from TPD so they can even get really good data? It doesn't sound like anybody has even approached that, but I mean, I'd like to see some kind of, because DTM is an enormous department and they seem like they've been slipping and slipping with everything they do. And I don't know if it's a money thing or a supply chain issue. We just had another thing come up last year where somebody calls us on the phone and they say, hey, we got some grant money, but we need to spend it in 2 weeks or something ridiculous. It was another one of those. They came out, decided they would put up these delineators, which are like these plastic poles that they just put a screw in the ground to hold up and some tar. And they put three or four installations of those. They're like fake roundabouts. And DTM came out and put those up. Well, people ran over them, broke them. We reported it 6 months ago, and they just now supposedly fixed it this week. If then their little responder says 6 to 8 weeks to your problem will be fixed. And I wrote to the DTM director, and I said, you know, the least you could do is give us a more realistic time frame. But they won't change their autoresponder. They just keep setting themselves up for people disliking them. And I really can't understand what's going on in there. You know, they installed some signs for us that are neighborhood designation signs, and they contracted it out. Well, the contractor dropped hardware in a few locations, nuts and bolts, just left them there. You know, what? You just kind of wonder about the monitoring of contractors because they don't have enough people to do it themselves, how they're coming up with the idea of where to put a hawk at, you know, when it didn't really seem necessary. You know, we have the least amount of crossers down there where they put that up. You know, and how are they working with TPD? You know, I don't even know how they could possibly even prioritize anything they're doing, truthfully. I don't know how they could possibly do it. So I just, and DTM is one of them. You know, so when you report a code enforcement issue, they send you back a case number. And they say, okay, here's your case number. You can track it online just to pro, and you can do that. Well, DTM has no method like that for the public. So once you report it, you might get something back that says we got your report, but it doesn't have a case number. We have to call them and tell them where it is and ask them what the status is. So where's the seniority that they should have? You know, so there's a lot of stuff about DTM that, you know, so I reported a pothole on my street 9 or 10 days ago, and I reported another pothole at the same time. It was over by Tucson Mall on a collector street. So one residential, one collector. They fixed the collector the next day. I have yet to hear about the one that's on the residential street. So I have to write them again. So anyhow, that's my future agenda. I would love to see an audit in there.
I'm not quite sure I understand exactly what you would like audited.
I don't know. I have to think about it and try to figure out what the scope would be, because you have to go after something in particular.
The Commission at Work raised an issue.
I was going to ask about two things from this conversation we had this afternoon, and that is, one, he deferred to TBD on enforcement. I don't know if that's a radical or good avenue to pursue. And the second one is the issue you raised earlier about traffic enforcement. Photographs over the lights.
Well, you don't have to be terribly aware to realize that if you're going down one of the major streets like Broadway or Speedway at about 40 miles an hour, you appear to be in the slow lane because everybody is going by at an incredible rate. And we heard from the Tucson Police Department that they have insufficient bodies to do an effective traffic enforcement. So it would appear as though we also are aware, however, that not too long ago, the city voted to get rid of those traffic cameras. I think it would be interesting to look into whether or not there is any impetus for reinstalling those cameras.
Well, what I had heard on the street after just our meeting, just asking around, is that because it was an initiative that took them off the streets, it has to be an initiative that puts them back. And I don't know whether that's an accurate understanding. That's certainly a big barrier if that's true.
Well, in addition, last week I heard on the news that the state of Arizona, there's a push in the state of Arizona to get rid of all traffic cameras because Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Chandler, they all still have red light cameras. And now somebody up there, I don't know who, if it's citizens or the state, but people want to see them go away. From everywhere. And so it might be a legislative thing that we're fighting too.
So I took notes on a few different things that the discussion's kind of revolved around. Do you want to see if there's appetite to hit any of them if I haven't clarified enough so that we can, like, line up staff to come in?
Okay.
So it sounds like discussion, I can do it like list format and then see if there's any other ideas also. Ones I've written down so far, seems like there is maybe an agenda for follow-up from TPD on the enforcement hotspots related to speed and or pedestrian safety. Is there an appetite to put that on a future agenda?
I would definitely to. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'd love to see that because they have a motor unit, but I've not seen them. And it's so maddening. You know, every day, I went and picked up trash on Pima Street today between Albernon and Columbus. And people are, it's predictable. And they're going to be speeding. And we see zero enforcement. And we've been asking for it for probably about 4 years now. Have never seen it.
Okay, the next one I have on the list is possible follow-up from TPD and or I could check with other city departments to see if the decision is somewhere else on the red light cameras or photo enforcement. Is there appetite to have that as a future agenda?
Well, at least the question that Commissioner Burke brought up is it necessary to get another initiative in order to get that? That would seem to be a dead end.
Yeah,
study
it. True.
If you need an initiative.
Okay. So I can look into that, maybe the housing wise of it gets implemented, taken away, how does it get back on? That might not be TPD, maybe I'll tap another source first, and then if there's follow up. The other ones I had were in the discussion on the safety data that DTM did, he referred a couple times to the source information is from TPD incident reports, basically. So maybe a follow-up from TPD on what they include, especially when there's a fatality involved, and why there's so many unknowns on their reports.
Yeah, I was troubled by that unknown. You cannot experience Tucson driving without seeing, as a result of an accident, TPD blocking the road for hours. And it would seem if they're that intensive an inspection, one would expect to have fewer unknowns.
Especially if it's fatality involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's an indication of the question. Good. What I'm thinking about what this commission needs to be doing is driving things that can make a difference. And if you can make a difference by bringing to their attention the concern about lack of data, it's just a fundamental piece of what needs to be obtained in order to move the item in the right direction, it's something we can bring to bear.
I'm not also aware of the ability of Blake's department to look at, as Commissioner Burke mentioned, other cities of similar sizes to determine if they're doing something different that would be possible to be used. I don't know if they could do that, but it might be an interesting question to follow up on.
Yes, I put that on my list as a city employee. That would be the question is, he said this gets all reported to the feds. They obviously have access to this information. I don't know if this access, if there's public access to the same information. I can dig into that a little bit deeper. He said that the most current information, so Commissioner Pollack brought up that this is from last year, we're almost at 6 months into the 2023, so 2022 should be available soon. I can schedule it as a maybe mid-year, late-year follow-up with DTM for the next round of this information, if you want that on the future agenda. And in there, I'll put the comparison to similar size, population, and density cities.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Are there, let's see, based on Commissioner Pollack's comments, is there appetite for follow-up on DTM process, their process for reporting and tracking citizen issues?
It becomes a real question. It was brought out fairly clearly that much of the mid area crossing outside of crosswalks is because they're so far, and people are, you just don't seem to be able to convince them to walk 200 yards to get to it. I'm not sure if there's anything anybody can do about that public attitude. But.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem. And then on collector streets, it's a little different because there's no crosswalks. You can almost cross anywhere. So they've made any, I think in people's minds, it's just made you think that they can cross anywhere. Now, we had two pedestrian deaths within about 2 months in a one-block area. And we didn't see any action out of DTM. And it wasn't until TPD and the neighborhood pushed DTM into do something that they came up with something. We requested that they put in pedestrian signs that are flashing that just say pedestrian crossing. You'd see them. It doesn't mean there's an official crossing there. It just means there's people in the area. And so we don't have sidewalks on front, and we don't have streetlights. And so I've come too close to a pedestrian at night in dark clothes. So they have a lot of things that they could be doing. I don't know if they just don't have money. Like 16 feed trailers in the entire city? That's ridiculous. And you can only get it for 2 weeks. And then you have to get back in line, and it's going to be over 6 months or more before you can get them again. And so you can't do anything with this peace trailer. You know, they should have a whole arsenal of those. They're not going to have officers out there with giving tickets. They need these speed trailers or these devices to let people know how fast they're going and what the speed limit is. Their answer is just to post another sign, and they don't work because I've got multiple signs posted and people still don't go that speed limit. I even had them stripe on the ground 30 miles per hour in two locations. And that seems to wake up people, but after they get past that 50 feet area of where they put the sign at, then they go 50 again. So
They just need to go study, like you're saying, other cities and see what they're doing, because other cities are doing more than we are. But anyhow.
A couple times it came up about both in DTM's presentation today and in the CAFR or the AFR presentation about budget and funded, which might be a root cause. We're right at the tail end or kind of almost right in the middle of the budget season for the city. Would it be, two things come up related to budget today. Yeah, DTM present that we have 16 of these devices. They run about $12,000 each. That's all they can afford. And they also have federal funding of $1.5 million. In your AFR presentation, the question came up on $47 million that's allocated to provide free fares on our transportation. So you got a comparison there on the Department of Student Safety Initiatives that has barely enough money for $12,000 worth of equipment, and a public transit that has $47 million. If there's appetite for it, we have our budget team that could go through the budget process and how departments kind of make their case for here's where the needs are at and how that goes through mayor and council. So that's also something that's on the table if you want to know how those decisions are made and why you have one department that struggles with finding funded while another department has excess of funded for certain things.
I would be interested. Yeah, I actually think that might be a more systemic approach to the issue.
All right.
And dragging one department in and questioning them about their budget.
It also, I'm not sure how it applies, but I was looking at the figures provided on the pedestrian, and they're apparently out of 321 incidents, there was no improper action in 122 of them. I don't know how we don't actually work with comparative negligence, but when you're driving a vehicle weighs a couple of tons, maybe 40 miles an hour, you are presenting a far more risk than somebody walking along the side of the road. I don't know exactly how we could approach it, or if we even should, but that's one of the things that concern me.
I can roll it into the TPD, how they fill out their reports, and what's the underlying piece of this.
Mr. Chairman, can I just say something real quick? I really apologize, but I have to run to another appointment. So I don't know. I hope I don't mess up with the quorum or anything, but I just wanted to let you know I have to jump off the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other suggestions for future items?
I have one additional one. The neighborhoods are very annoyed at the different departments in the city who are spying down their trees. So about a month ago, transportation went out to the Sam Hughes neighborhood to take a look at the sidewalk that buckled. And they had asked them to see if they would need to remove some of the root of a tree. And within a couple of hours, they sawed down two mature trees in front of somebody's house. Of course, they were in the driveway. And the city keeps coming up with excuses about why it happens, but yet it keeps happening over and over and over again. And it goes totally against the tree challenge and all of our issues that we're having. So I've had numerous people ask me about looking into why are trees being sawed down by city departments without authorization. So this last one they did, they came back and the director said, okay, we're going to have three sign-offs before somebody can saw a tree down. But if you give somebody a saw, it doesn't matter if they have sign-offs. They'll do what they want. And so the tree issue is becoming very hot topic out there for neighborhoods. So I'd like to see us look at which departments are allowed to do maintenance. Because DTM has a maintenance crew, and there's at least one other department. But DTM is the one who's been doing the most damage. They sawed down a tree at our bus stop a couple of years ago, just down to the ground. They were just supposed to trim a branch. they go around and trim trees. Like, somebody complains, oh, there's a branch sticking out. They'll run over there and try and saw it down. But what I'm concerned about is, do they even have training? Do they even have record training? Do they? What are they doing? Because it's kind of the same thing we saw with code enforcement, where they had kind of an unofficial training program with nothing written down and no record. And so I'm wondering if they're doing the same thing that's causing that. But, you know, that one's not an emergency or anything, but they are sawing a fair amount of trees down and doing damage.
I'd like to table that suggestion and have you fill it out a little bit more about where we might actually direct our attention.
Yeah, it'll probably be in DTM. I'll get some information.
Thank you. Anything else? And I do believe we're adjourned.
Yes. Oh, Chair? Mr. Robert, Mr. Rodriguez, it appears his hand's up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I missed that. Commissioner Rodriguez? Commissioner Rodriguez, are you still there? Do you still have a question or discussion item?
I apologize to Mr. Rodriguez for not seeing the end up either.
We are adjourned.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you.